Well, now the question's being raised over the closure of the Laura Ferguson Trust Rehabilitation Centre. The centre in Green Lane, with a hydrotherapy pool and specialised gym equipment, is the only specialised facility of its kind for disabled people in Auckland and closed for good during the lockdown in March. Disabilities advocates say the closure's terrible for people with disabilities who now have only one hydrotherapy pool in the whole city. The Trust's board spent $670,000 of public money and donations on consultants, while it posted a $1 million loss in 2019. Auckland-based company director Victoria Carter, whose niece was a client at the Trust after a horse riding accident, has instructed a QC to seek information from the Trust board. She says the inquiries have been met with stalling tactics and secrecy. Victoria Carter is with us now. Good morning.
Morena.
What is it you're seeking, please, to find out via lawyers?
Well, I just want to go back for a minute, Catherine, and just mention it wasn't just the disabled who have had the benefit of the facilities that Laura Ferguson Trust provided. Thousands would go through it annually for Parkinson classes. There were stroke programs, neurological rehabilitation, pool and rehabilitation. My doctor even recommended the pool to me when I ripped my Achilles. They had a very active gym membership of the elderly. So you can imagine, this is a pretty vital community asset, not just some 54 beds for disabled residential care that has been lost to Auckland. So what I've asked a QC to do is to just ask some questions of Laura Ferguson's lawyers, Bell Gully. There's no provision in the trust deed to pay trustees. So we're querying why there was a payment made to the chairman. We've heard and read from some papers that have been released that Price Waterhouse in Australia and Wellington were commissioned to do lengthy reports. It sounds like they've been advising for a number of years. What I don't understand is when they made the decision to shut the facility, why they haven't released that report, because it might help us all understand their decision-making process. The fact they aren't sharing it, of course, makes everybody wonder, what did it say that might have been different? And the other thing that we want to know is, how will the trust assets be used to further the sole objective of the trust? I think that the disabled of New Zealand deserve an answer to that.
Can we deal with them in the three parts, please? First, the payments to the chairman. Are we talking payments beyond any nominal sum that can be paid to someone serving in a particular role? Could you elaborate on that, please?
The trustee actually says that the trustees are not to be remunerated. So that suggests to me that you can't get a payment for attending meetings or providing services. In some organisations, there is a payment to trustees, but this doesn't look like the case here. The fact that the chairman was paid for consultancy services, I'd be curious, and I think most of us are curious, to know what was so specialist about those services that the board determined that they would pay him rather than use somebody else to provide those services.
Is it clear the sum that was paid, please, if you haven't told us already?
$94,000.
Right. To pay to
that's
the chairman
what the, for... That's what the 2019 accounts show.
Right. And the 2019 accounts say though that payment was for...
Consultant.
Right. Can we look at the second question you have, please, which is what PwC Australia and New Zealand have been doing. That sum has reached $670,000. Does it appear like it's over a number of years that they've been providing services?
Well, since you did your first story, a number of people have got in touch with me and said that Price Waterhouse has been acting for a few years.
Right.
I think what don't understand is why everything has been done so quietly. Why is there this careful schedule that they've stuck pretty close to shut it down? And why were staff and clients all sworn not to speak when the announcement was made last year? You know, you can imagine, if you've got a loved one, you wouldn't dare say a word in case it it meant that your loved one didn't find a nice place when they were moved out of Laura Ferguson. You know, that feels to me a little bit like institutional bullying. Staff have talked to me about how tragic it was that they never got to say goodbye to people that they have lovingly cared for many years. There was no sense of celebrating the incredibly good work that Laura Ferguson Trust and the people that worked there have done for so many years. Two people actually, have told me about the awkward farewell, which the chairman didn't attend, where the staff were presented with two Laura Ferguson pens, a pad and a keep cup from a failed fundraiser, all wrapped up in cellophane. That was the gift for people who have worked for, some of them whom have worked for 10 or 20 years and earned that trust the incredible reputation it had.
So was any explanation made public as to the rationale of closing the rehab centre?
They have continually said that money is an issue and that it's all about money. However, I've seen some minutes of meetings they've had with the Ministry of Health in November last year, and they never raised the issue of money with the Ministry over successive years.
Does the Ministry contribute any funding?
Well, they were told last November when they were advised by the Trust that they proposed to shut the facility that it was too late for that.
Who said it was too late for Ministry funding?
The Laura Ferguson Trust.
So is there the possibility they could have obtained Ministry funding, applied for Ministry funding?
The implication is there. I think that the Ministry perhaps recognised how vital the facility was, and it seems extraordinary that there is this disconnect between the Ministry and Laura Ferguson, and the fact that nobody has clearly enunciated, hey, we need more money to do X, Y, Z. If that's what the Price Waterhouse report was throwing up, I would have thought the Ministry was the first place you went to say, if we're required to provide this sort of a service, this is how much it's going to cost. And I would have thought that that's the time that you also might seek assistance from your local MP, which in this case is David Seymour, to say, hey, we need your help to get better funding because we are shouldering the responsibility for some very high-needs disabled people, and we're happy to do that, but it comes at a cost.
Could you speak again, as we said, there's the residential facility, 54 beds, gone. The rehab centre itself, though, the gym and the hydrotherapy pool, is there anything else like it that can now be used?
No, I'm told by specialist physiotherapists that there isn't anything like the hydrotherapy pool and the specialist gym that was built in the mid-1990s by Aucklanders, largely, for Aucklanders. It had very specialist equipment, unique equipment for disabled people and special equipment for upper limbs. The physios have talked to me about specialist beds, which I haven't seen in any gym in Auckland, to help elderly people and disabled people build the strength that they need for their rehabilitation.
Can we talk about the finances? We said $1 million loss. You've not been able to cite, and you're asking through lawyers to cite the PwC report, which presumably has been about looking into financial circumstances, structure, organisation, that kind of thing, one presumes. But can you also speak to efforts you've gone to try and get people to sign up? Because it was $1 million loss for 1 year. Well, you're looking for $1 million to replace it, aren't you, if that's a normal likely to be a regular loss. So you've been attempting to get people to sign up and support the trust. What's happened when they've attempted to?
Yes, that's interesting. I've encouraged people to become a member of the trust, and a very good number have told me that they have. But I applied to join over 3 weeks ago and have not heard anything. I've paid my money, as have all of the people that I know have paid their money. And we're waiting to hear what's happened to that. Now, in terms of process, what usually would happen is that the board would meet, and if there was a list of 30, 40, 50 people that wish to apply to become members, they would ratify that. They do have the option of declining some members, but I do know that the chief executive's son and some of the chief executive's friends have joined up to become members in recent years, so it'll be very interesting to see if I make the cut or if some of the other people that I know have made the cut. Dennis Lane and another couple of people have told me that they applied for membership in the last 6 months, and they had their checks, they had a check returned to them for their $30, saying that the trust was busy transitioning and so was unable to process new memberships. Now,
the third thing you mentioned was assets, Victoria. I want to talk about that. Does the trust have much in assets?
It's an asset-rich and, I imagine, cash-poor facility. It owns an exceptionally expensive property, valuable property, in Epsom on a number of titles.
What will it continue doing once this facility goes? What remains?
Well, that's what I think is that's the third issue that we've asked their lawyers to explain. How will the trust assets be used to further the sole objective of the trust, which is to provide residential solution for disabled people?
So are you saying its entire purpose is what has just closed? Well, its existing iteration of its entire purpose is what has just closed. Is that what you're telling me?
On the face of it.
Right,
on the
okay.
Face of it.
So what under the trust's constitution, what does that mean for what you are telling me are quite valuable assets?
Well, that's the question we all want to know, isn't it? And I think that the disabled people of Auckland deserve to know the answer to that. Staff have talked to me about site evaluations being done, soil testing. It does make you very anxious that real estate agents have been briefed and are just waiting for some sort of go button, and it really would be tragic. I think Lady Ferguson and Lady Coe would be rolling in their graves to see what's happened in the last 10, 15 years.
So the QC's been briefed and is putting these questions, Victoria, and now what?
We're waiting for an answer. The letter was sent 3 weeks ago. We've had two stalling letters in the meantime, wanting to know who the QC is acting for. We replied to that. Then we got another letter saying, and who else might you be acting for? So that did feel a little bit like stalling tactics. What bothers me is that this isn't a private company. This is public money. The Laura Ferguson Trust was one of the early flagships of fundraising. Dame Rosie Horton cut her teeth fundraising for Laura Ferguson. This was one of the most extraordinary places to raise money. And back in the late 60s, it was raising $1 million a year, which is phenomenal in these times.
Thank you, Victoria. That is Victoria Carter. We have invited the chair of the Laura Ferguson Trust, Chris O'Brien, onto the program this morning. We've not heard back, and I understand RNZ has made repeated requests to speak to him. We would truly appreciate doing so.